Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
30 minutes away from game two of our Thanksgiving doubleheader, no longer a tripleheader, as the Steelers and Ravens game for Pittsburgh that was scheduled for tonight has been moved to Sunday with a 1:15 Eastern time kick. So we've got Washington and Dallas about to go at it. It's not for the supremacy or the top spot in the NFC East, because that's held by a team at 3-6-1 in the Philadelphia Eagles, but the other three teams in the division, Bucky, are 3-7. So whoever wins today of this game is going to have a leg up in a division that is still up for grabs. And as it stands right now, who is the best team, do you think, in 2020 in the NFC East?
Best team in the NFC East. That is a tough one.
This is like a magic trick, by the way, because no matter what you answer, it's going to lead to something that I'm going to say. So go ahead.
So I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go out on a limb. And I'm going to say that the Cowboys are going to win today, and that is going to make them the best team in the NFC East.
Okay, that's fair enough. And we've given the Cowboys a bunch of flack throughout this season, just like when we spoke with Jory Epstein last hour. I was even trying to give credit to the Joneses and Mike McCarthy, and she's like, well, they're still 3-7. So like there's something to that, but when everybody else is bad in your division, somebody's got to win it. And you said if Dallas gets the win today, they could move forward. But also, like we talked about earlier in this show, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a topic of conversation because of the seemingly a little bit of friction, or Tom Brady and Bruce Arians not being on the same page, but I'd still say they're 7-4. So when we look at the Philadelphia Eagles in all of this, even though they may not be Bucky's favorite to win the NFC East, right now, as it stands at this minute, they are atop the division. But what the heck is wrong in Philadelphia, Bucky? Because it seems to go in a lot of places. When Doug Peterson did his his radio hit on WIP in Philadelphia a week or two ago, they had read a poll right before he came on, said 72% of the fans believe that he is the problem. He's constantly had to stand up for Carson Wentz, even doing so much this week when there seemed to be a little bit of confusion on the comments that Peterson made about Wentz starting, but did confirm that Wentz would start Monday night in Seattle. But where has it all gone wrong from a team that won a Super Bowl just 3 years ago?
Well, there are a few different things that have taken place, I would say, over the last couple of years with Carson Wentz. One, when they won the Super Bowl, obviously teams come and raid your coaching staff and they take him. And so they lost Frank Wright. He became a head coach with the Indianapolis Colts. He was the offensive coordinator when Carson Wentz was playing at his best. Was a great not only sounding board but organizer for that offense, even though Doug Peterson called plays. John DeFilippo was the quarterback coach. He had a direct line to the quarterback's ear. Did a really good job of getting Carson Wentz to kind of embrace his strengths and kind of play within the framework of the game plan. Well, now all those guys are gone. And what happened this last offseason, Doug Peterson wanted to bring in new voices to add to the mix and kind of change up this offense. And so he brought Rich Scangarello in, who had been fired as the offense coordinator for the Denver Broncos. Marty Morwig comes over from the Baltimore Ravens. Press Taylor, who is Zach Taylor's brother, he is in charge of the passing game. You still have Deuce Staley there, who is assistant head coach, but is really chiefly responsible for putting the running game together. And I really believe that there are too many voices in Carson Wentz's head. There are too many cooks in the kitchen. You can't get the recipe right because everyone wants to add a little something else. And so the mac and cheese doesn't taste like the mac and cheese is supposed to, because you got just too many different ingredients and everyone trying to make it their own special concoction. And then you have Carson Wentz, who was playing at an MVP level, but I would say injuries and maybe his fundamentals have regressed has prevented him from being a really good player. And so what has happened is he's holding on to the ball too long. He's not sticking with the plays in terms of running them as they're supposed to go according to script. And then the other thing that he's doing is he's simply just trying to do too much. And when he tries to play hero ball, it ultimately falters. And that is why he leads the league in giveaways and interceptions and sacks and all of those things. But here's the thing, because everyone is calling for his head and why they need to remove him. They can't, because they paid him. And they can't get out from that contract until next year at the earliest, but really 2 years. And so now it's incumbent upon Doug Peterson and that front office to figure out a way to fix him. And if Doug Peterson can't fix him, somebody else is going to come in and be tasked with fixing Carson Wentz, because the money is tied up in him. You have to get the quarterback right.
My biggest issue with Philadelphia, and in a league that nobody cares about your excuses, so they don't care that you lose your guard at the end of the season. They don't care that Lane Johnson is out. They don't care about those things. They don't care that big pieces of your offensive line are not there at certain points or for the entire season. What they do care about, though, is having an identity, or at least knowing what your team is all about. And that's the issue that I have for Philadelphia. Like, as a if I'm an Eagles fan, what I care about is knowing that this is how, if my team comes into a football game, this is likely how they're going to win it. As a Seahawks fan, I know it's likely going to have to come on the shoulders of Russell Wilson. I know it. Like, but now with their running game being healthy, I think it's going to be a mix. But if I had to pick one way to do it, probably going to be on Russell Wilson's shoulders if that running game isn't there and it's been banged up. So I know that. If I'm Philadelphia, I'm saying run the stupid football. And I know that Miles Sanders hasn't necessarily been healthy, Bucky, but that seems to me to be their way to do things differently and their way to take some of the pressure that Carson Wentz is putting on himself, if that seems to be the case. 14 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. I've said this for weeks, that I just don't know their identity. And I think that Miles Sanders is by far their best offensive weapon that they've had, and he has been dinged up this season, start of the year, and then as of late, but was able to return. And I don't see that commitment to the run. I still see some of the stuff that they did during their Super Bowl season. And the personnel, the ones that are still there, are 3 years older. And it doesn't seem to. So that mac and cheese that you talk about is severely aged cheese, and not the good cheese. It's maybe the cheese with the mold on it, and that's why it doesn't taste good. I think that they're trying to be at times the team that they were 3 years ago, when maybe they just need to run the ball, keep the defense off the field, which is another issue that I think that they have. Not that their defense is bad, it just hasn't force the turnovers like they did 3 years ago in their Super Bowl run. They just don't have any identity. And I think that it's not all Carson Wentz's fault, when, even though he's had bad throws and we've seen bad interceptions, I think that it's on the coaching staff, whether it's one voice or three different voices, to figure out a way where this offense is going, because I don't know what they are. I have no, they didn't have wide receivers and they're still throwing the football around. Like that was my issue to me with Philadelphia.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge issue. And look, I'll say this. Carson Wentz isn't playing well, but I would say that this team does not have an identity. They haven't discovered their identity. And typically what happens, Dan, each and every year, you kind of discover your identity maybe in the middle of the season. You go into the year thinking, hey, I want to play like a certain way, but then you get in and you're like, oh, we can't really do this. We have to do something different. When I look at the Philadelphia Eagles, the things that you're talking about, the defense struggling, the lack of running game, to me, they don't understand how to play complementary ball. And I know that term is overused when we talk about, well, what is complementary ball? Complementary football is your offensive coordinator, your defense coordinator, your special teams coordinator, they all call the game to complement one another. Meaning, if my offense knows that the defense is struggling, we change our tactics to make sure that we can cover up for their shortcomings. So if the defense isn't playing well, we're going to run the ball, reduce the number of total possessions in the game, so now the defense isn't exposed. If the offense is struggling, well, hey, defensively, we have to be a little more aggressive with our pressure package so we can generate negative plays, create shorter fields, maybe come up with some scoring opportunities on our own to alleviate some of the burden on the offense to go the length of the field. Special teams-wise, do we have to do fake punts or gadgets and gimmicks to maybe give us an explosive play to flip the field? When I look at Philadelphia, for whatever reason, Doug Peterson hasn't been able to get this team to understand, guys, here's how we have to win the game. And that means more Miles Sanders. We're going to run the football. We're going to take the ball out of Carson Wentz's hand a little bit. We're going to make sure that we take it over. If we have to punt, we're a punt. We'll do things that we have to do to win. A lot of coaches say, I'll do whatever I have to do to win. I want to do it. But their actions don't match their words. And when I look at Philadelphia, this is a team that it really is unwilling to do what is necessary to win. Because the observation that you made is one that everyone makes. I really don't know why they just don't hand the ball off and just run the ball a little more, take some of the pressure off Carson Wentz, do some of those things until he can get comfortable. But they refuse to do it. They just keep throwing it and throwing and throwing it. And it's a recipe for disaster based on the injuries that they have up front and the way their quarterback is playing.
I also think, too, when you have linemen, and I mentioned their offensive line, but they lost Brandon Brooks for the season. They don't have Andre Dillard. I mentioned Lane Johnson was dinged up. It's a lot easier when you have guys come in that can maybe just block running the football, I would assume, in terms of not worrying about pass protection. So I think that would help them there. And I also have these two numbers, and I compare it to the Super Bowl year because it just seems like such a far cry. The Eagles were a team that I put in the Super Bowl last year because I thought the talent on their team was that good that they were able to do something. They won the division, but they weren't going to do anything in the playoffs last season. The 2017 offense had 23 turnovers in 19 games. That includes Super Bowl 52. This season, 20 turnovers in just 10 games. But on the defense as well, that defense that season forced 35 turnovers that Super Bowl season in their 19 games. They forced just 11 so far this season. So you double that up to what would be a 20-game stretch. It's only 22 turnovers when that Super Bowl team turned them over 35 times or turned teams over 35 times. And that's an issue. But it's also tough when the defense has to go against a team that maybe doesn't have to throw the ball because the offense that they're going against is going to put up a lot of points.
Yeah, there is something to that. And so, like, the turnover issue that you point to, here's one of the benefits of running the football. The odds of turning the ball over go down. Because, look, when you throw the ball, there are four outcomes that can happen, right? You can have the completion, but you can have an incompletion, a sack, and a turnover. So 75% of the things that you do when you drop that back to pass are probably bad. And in this league, it's all about avoiding the negative play. And so when you pass the ball so much, and I'm telling you the outcomes that are there, what happens, you have more negative plays traditionally. And so when you have negative plays on offense, it burdens your defense because now they're playing on a shorter field. And when you're unable to kind of dictate the terms or you're giving the ball away to the other team, the defense can't dictate the terms. The defense is unable to put the opposing offense in bad situations. So now they can pin their ears back. And they can go and get the ball on turnovers, long yardage passing situations where you can heat up the quarterback. Then you get an interception off a tip or an overthrow. They've been unable to do it because they can never get control of the game, meaning that they're up, they're forcing the opponent to play in these obvious passing downs when everyone in the stadium knows it's a pass. And so it's really a collaborative effort, and they're failing on both parts because the offense isn't doing their job and the defense can't dictate the terms and they're not doing their job in terms of getting the ball back.
You mentioned that the 75% of the things that can happen when you pass are negative. With the Jets, it's 95. So that's where the stat changes. 95% of the time, it's not going to go well for the Jets when they drop back to pass. Just a little levity on this Thanksgiving Day. Get Bucky on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox as we are sitting in for Doug Gottlieb here on this Thanksgiving Day. We are thankful that you are listening along with us, whether you're driving, if you're driving somewhere, maybe you're just staying at home being safe. We are very, very grateful and thank you and thankful that you are listening to us today. So consider yourself a part of our extended Fox Sports Radio family on this Thanksgiving Day. Coming up next, we dive more into the Cowboys-Washington showdown and what's it really like to play on a Thanksgiving Day. We'll talk to a former NFL player next year on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get right to it on this Thanksgiving Day. I'm Dan Beyer. He's Bucky Brooks. We are sitting in for Doug Gottlieb. Bucky, of course, the five-year NFL vet. We are about to talk to another NFL vet who joins Doug every week and is kind enough to join us on this Thanksgiving Day. Former NFL quarterback and former Oklahoma State Cowboy Brandon Whedon joins us again here on Fox Sports Radio. Brandon, happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We haven't eaten yet, so I'm not in my food coma. But, yeah, other than that, not too bad.
Don't worry. I've had people fall asleep during my shows, not necessarily because of turkey, but for other reasons. All right, so what's it like to play on Thanksgiving Day? You were a Cowboy once. What is that week like? What is the setup? Is it different than other Thursday games or other primetime games? What is it like playing on Thanksgiving?
You know, it's a blast. I remember kind of before, obviously, I was in the NFL. I remember in high school, my coach was like, you know, our goal is to, you know, practice on Thanksgiving, and which means you're playing the semifinals. That was always a big deal. So I'd always, you know, that was, I'd only done that once in high school. So, you know, come to the NFL, and I didn't, when I was in Cleveland, I didn't play on Thanksgiving, obviously. But when I was in Dallas, both my years there, we did. And it's awesome. I mean, really nothing changes. I mean, you try to keep the same week, can't kind of keep the same routine, you know, but you do probably, most guys probably have a lot more family in town. You got more obligations there. You know, once the game's over, go back to the house and, you know, you have your feast and stuff like that. So it's fun, man. I really, really enjoyed it. You know, obviously the traditions and, you know, some of the memories, some of the games and, you know, particularly with Dallas that took place on Thanksgiving. So I always enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun, man. It was one of those memories I'll never forget.
No, Brandon, I kind of want to tap into your insight and perspective, because you've done everything. You started in the league, you've been a backup in the league, and I've never really figured this out. How come backup quarterbacks don't get enough reps in practice?
That's a good question. I think a large part of it is because, you know, teams are trying to find a way to cut back on reps for everybody. You know, you want to try to do as much as you need without doing too much. You know, so, you know, early in the year you may get, let's call it 8 or 10 plays per team session for offense, you know, max 10 probably, and then, you know, as the year goes on, you can cut those back to sometimes 8, you know, just because of injuries and receivers and, you know, just keeping guys fresh. So that's the big deal now, right? I mean, it's nutrition, keeping everybody fresh, get to Sunday feeling as good as you can. Well, they dang sure don't want to use a rep on a backup quarterback whenever the starter is getting relatively limited reps as well. So, you know, what I always did was, you know, the game plan, you know, if I'm throwing a dig, I mean, or a comeback, a traditional throw, I wouldn't really work on that post-practice. But, you know, maybe a play-action pass that we have installed for that particular week. I'd stay after practice, grab a couple receivers, and throw a few of those routes, especially off of action, that maybe were in the game plan. That's how I got my reps. So, you know, the live reps, I mean, they're few and far between for backup quarterbacks. It's a lot of mental stuff, but in large part because, you know, teams are trying to find a way to cut back on reps for everybody just to stay fresh on Sundays.
Former NFL quarterback Brandon Whedon joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer sitting in for Doug. Along those lines, how difficult is it to stay engaged if you're not getting the reps?
Yeah, it's not bad, you know, because, you know, every week's different, you know, and so you're so dialed in on the game plan, you know, starting on Monday. I mean, you come in, you knock the past week out, and you're already on to the next one. So, you know, every day is different in the NFL, and I could break it all down for you. But, you know, Wednesdays, it, you know, pretty much, you know, first and second down, and you move on to third down and the red zone. I mean, so it's pretty easy come practice time because, I mean, you're like, well, shoot, this may be the only time we run this play, so let's see how it looks. So as a backup, I mean, especially as a quarterback, you know, you always got your helmet on, so you can hear the play that's coming into the starter. You can hear the communication, you know, from the coach that's calling the play to the quarterback, you know, so you kind of put yourself in a game situation that way. That's really the main thing. I mean, you know, it's cliche, but every backup quarterback will tell you, you got to prepare like you're going to be the starter because, you know, in this league, I mean, we've seen a lot of backup quarterbacks that are called on to come in, and it's, you know, physically it's a little more challenging, but I think mentally it's relatively easy to stay dialed in just because, you know, again, there's not a ton of reps in practice, and you got to be sharp.
You know, Brandon, you wouldn't know this, but I had a chance to scout you when you were coming out of Oklahoma State, and the offense that you guys ran there was remarkable. You guys used to rip up and down the field and do those things, and I was always aware that it was a pretty limited menu. And so when I look at NFL coaches and I look at the sideline, I look at offensive coordinators with these big old play sheets and all of these plays in the game plan, like 100 plays, 100 pass plays or whatever. Do you feel like teams could be more efficient with a smaller menu for the quarterback and the playmakers so they really can master it? Or do you think it's essential to have so many plays at your disposal in the National Football League?
No, I've always thought that there's too much. I think a lot of it's overkill. You know, you waste your time. You kind of chase ghosts throughout the week, and you try to dial up all these perfect plays. And, I mean, I think, you know, especially in the run game, I mean, there's just – you go into a game of 40-some-odd runs and shifts and motions, and, you know, especially when you're in charge of the mic. When, you know, a lot of – when I was with Tony in Dallas, you know, the quarterback really, if a run play was called, they just turned and handed off. So those run plays weren't as critical, but there's still a bunch of pass plays, you know, that you're required to be dialed in on. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, yes, I think there's too much. I mean, I think not that it's overloading the quarterback, but, you know, you have 40, 50 plays in a game play, and you may run 70 of them. So you take half of them and throw them out the window. You know, you might as well dial in what you think is going to be good, have some, obviously, some backups. Obviously, the third down package is probably the most important, third down in red zone. But, yeah, I mean, I think the guys that are really good, you know, find a way to run the plays that you're good at and find ways to dress them up with formation, personnel, motion, different things like that. But you're still running a very similar concept, you know, and that'll eliminate some of those, you know, the overloaded play sheets. So, yeah, I've said that from day one. I came in, I was in the West Coast system, and it was just too much. I mean, it was wordy. And there was way too many plays going to game plan, you know. And when you're so worried, when you're a young player and you're worried about learning your own system, you really don't have enough time to dial in and diagnose what they're doing defensively, because you're so worried about calling the play right and making sure you're on top of your own stuff. So, and that's a long-winded way of saying yes. Teams have too much come game day.
Well, I'll say this: Bucky tabbed you as a big-armed brute in some of his reports, and even in other draft classes. He also, to what you were saying, is after your rookie year, you know, felt because of a coaching change that things would take your game to the next level, which leads me to my next question. Brandon Whedon joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Would a coaching change help Matthew Stafford in Detroit? As the Lions were shorthanded on offense, no doubt about it, no Galladay, no Swift. But would that help Matthew Stafford, or is the break going to have to maybe come from Stafford leaving Detroit? But how would you assess the Lions quarterback and what is needed for him in the future?
I literally, 5 minutes before you guys called, I mean, we were talking about Stafford, and I was like, man, he's one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch. I think he's so underrated. What he does with football, he's an incredible thrower. I mean, I love watching him throw. Yeah, they're banged up and he's limited receiver wise. But you can say what you want to say about Patricia. I mean, but he's a defensive minded football coach, so he's not the one calling the plays. He's really not involved in the offense. I mean, he is strictly a defensive football coach. So, in my opinion, if you're gonna blame anybody, you know, other maybe than Matt, you know, you got to start with Darren Bevell, the offensive coordinator. I mean, that's where it's got to go. I mean, you know, if they fire Patricia, I wouldn't be shocked, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, that's not in correlation, I guess, with what Stafford's mm-hmm. doing and what they're doing offensively. They got shut out last week. They're beat up. I get it. But, you know, they're just, he just doesn't, you know, today they ran the ball relatively efficiently, but, you know, still got beat by what, 16, 17 points. So he's never had a great run game in Detroit. You know, he's had to do a lot of it with his arm, and that's challenging enough. But, you know, I've never thought he got enough credit. I think he's an unbelievable quarterback and extremely talented, unbelievable arm talent. You know, just keep putting weapons around him, get him a run game, and find him a coach that calls plays that kind of fits his skill set, in my opinion.
He's Brandon Whedon joining us. Go ahead, Bucky.
No, it's just – refreshing to hear that, because I just wonder Brandon can speak to this. Brandon, how many quarterbacks really see their careers fail to get off the ground just due to being in a system that either doesn't fit their talents or not having the right coach that can just let them play the game to the max of their ability? How important is the coach when it comes to the way a quarterback thrives at the next level?
That's huge. You know, I think, you know, you get stuck in the system early in your career. I mean, it is hard to overcome it. And, you know, I've always felt like, and especially early in my career, not necessarily the coaches I've had, but just coaches across the league, you know, the good coaches find a way to adapt to their guys. You know, they're not going to have, hey, this is the playbook. We're going to run these plays. We're going to make them work come hell or high water. You know, the good coaches adapt, and they find ways to get creative. You know, I mean, I look at like guys like Andy Reid. I mean, you know, what he did with Alex Smith is completely different than what he's doing with Patrick Mahomes. He's innovative. He's smart. Bellamy's an unbelievable offensive mind. You know, so they've – and Patrick Mahomes is incredible. But what I'm saying is these coaches, sometimes they're so archaic in what they want to do offensively, and they don't change. They don't adapt to the times. If you're a quarterback and you get stuck in that, man, it's hard to overcome. And you couple that with maybe not being around really good players. I don't care who you are. I mean, unless you're Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers in the prime, you got to have guys around you. I mean, you got to have, you know, a defense. You got to have, you know, a decent running game. You got to have a receiver or two. And if not, I mean, I don't care where you're playing. The NFL is tough. It's going to beat you down. But the system is a large, large part of it. If you don't have a system to fit your skill set, I mean, for example, myself, you know, I was a shotgun guy in college, never went under center. And then my rookie year, I'm under center literally, statistically, more than any other quarterback in the NFL. And that's, you know, obviously I wasn't comfortable, but I got used to it and felt more comfortable as time went on. But it's just, you know, I think the good coaches find a way to adapt to their players and evolve and get creative and find ways to put them in position to be successful.
I'll wrap this up just by saying this, and I'm not blowing any hot air, Brandon. I just did quick searches, and Bucky is praising you up and down, whether it be prior to being drafted by the Browns, after being drafted. I'll just say this. If he characterizes, he says, the mature, experienced Whedon quickly won the starting job by displaying all of the physical tools teams covet in a franchise quarterback. He also said that it would be complicated because the jobs of many in that Browns organization at that time were on your shoulders because Mike Holmgren was there, Pat Shurmur was there, you had new ownership there. So Bucky was a Brandon Whedon fan from day one, and he had your back then, and he had your back today, too.
You know, Bucky, I appreciate that. Actually, you know, and I knew that. I've seen some of the stuff you'd said. I appreciate that. I mean, it's funny, you're talking about being a big arm guy. That was one of the knocks on me coming out. I remember some guys were saying my arm wasn't strong enough. I'm like, well, if my arm's not strong enough, I have no chance. That's my only strength. I can't run. I'm not mobile. I mean, I was blessed with a strong right arm, but you know, some guys said my arm wasn't strong enough to make it. I'm like, well, man, I don't know. I don't know what tape they were watching. They must have seen a different one, but it is what it is, man. I do appreciate that.
You should hear the things Bucky says about me behind my back. They're just the opposite. No. Brandon, have a great Thanksgiving. We appreciate the time. Doug will be back next week chatting it up, but we love to talk to you, and best to you and yours. Have a good one.
All right, guys. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks.
Brandon Whedon, former NFL quarterback, Oklahoma State. You nailed it, Bucky. You did. I mean, in just mentioning, and I think Brandon was being nice and some of that stuff, but you even called a quick search.
Yeah, it's funny because I had a chance to watch him play in the Fiesta Bowl against Stanford, and he and Blackman just absolutely went up and down the field against Andrew Luck and the Cardinal. And I just always wondered if Whedon had played in a system that really – attenuated his game like that system that he played in at Oklahoma State. Like, how good could he be? But he talked about the challenges when it comes to being a quarterback in the National Football League. Just hearing him talk about the game plan may have 125 plays, but most NFL games only have 70 to 75 plays. So that means, like, literally, Dan, you can't repeat a play. Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So you spend all your practice time on things that never happen. So how can you get good at anything when you're just spinning your wheels? It's just a crazy philosophy that I can't understand why we still subscribe to it in the National Football League.
He's Bucky Brooks. Find him on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. We put John Ramos in the hot seat coming up next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
John Ramos, are you there?
I'm ready to go.
Are you ready to play Strike Up the Band? Are you ready to play heel or no heel?
Yes, heel or no heel. Ready to go.
Bucky Brooks and I have a list of names. Some are North Carolina Tar Heels. Some are not.
Okay.
The Bucky's alma mater. So Bucky and I will alternate to giving you a name. And John, you have to determine if they are a heel or no heel. Okay?
Okay.
Simple enough?
Yeah, it sounds simple enough. Yes.
Okay, we're going to start you out. I'll start out Bucky. I'll give him the first name. Is that cool? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, the first name, Christian Laettner. Is that a heel or no heel?
That is a no heel.
That would be correct. That would be correct on that one. I started him out easy, Bucky.
I mean, man, way to give him a softball. How about this? So I'm going to go back and I'm going to test you with the Tar Heels. Let's go with Andy Griffith.
Ooh.
Heel or no heel?
Well, I'm gonna say no heel because I that's not the actor, right? Andy Griffith, is it?
Yeah, Mayberry.
But so I would say no heel.
Mm. Oh, Johnny!
Was he a Tar Heel?
He was a Tar Heel.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes. In fact, the whistling that he does is the North Carolina fight song.
That
no, I'm kidding. I made that up. I made that up. Go Tar Heels, go Tar Heels, run up and down the field.
Oh.
The go Tar Heels, dunk that basketball. Oh. All right, John, you are 1-4-2.
Okay.
What about President James K. Polk?
That's a long time ago.
Yes.
I would say
heel or no heel. Was he a Tar Heel or not?
I don't think so. I would say no heel.
He was. I believe he was the only president from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So James K. Polk is on the list as a heel. 1-3 so far in.
Come on, John. We got to get back on track.
Heel. We're
going to try and give you a softball. We're going to try and give you something
okay.
that can get you back on track. This should be an easy one. We all know this one. How about Frank Lloyd Right.
Oh, my God.
Heel
great architect.
Or no heel.
One of the greatest architects of all time. I would say, well, you say it's an easy one, so I'm going to say he's a heel.
No, John. No. He went to my alma mater of Wisconsin.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I'm learning something today.
You are Frank Lloyd wrong with that one. All right, let's see if we can get back on the winning track. What about William Eldridge Brooks Jr.? Is that a heel or no heel?
I'm going to say that's a heel.
I mean, I certainly hope you would get
yeah.
that right.
Yes.
Bucky, you're
that
a heel.
Is Bucky. Yes, yeah. That's Bucky's real full name.
Right. Yeah.
All right, John's back
okay.
on track.
Come on, John. So we have to be able to get 2-for-2. Let's see if we can get this right. So let's go with Jerry Stackhouse. Heel or no heel?
Okay. I believe. Oh, man. I'm trying to think it's Kentucky or North Carolina. I can't remember which one. I know Jamal Mashburn was Kentucky. I'm going to say Stackhouse. Oh, I think he was Kentucky. I'd say no heel.
Oh, John, you broke the hearts.
I'm sorry.
Those are almost fighting words.
Oh.
And Carolina in the same sentence. Two of the most storied basketball programs.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I knew it was one of the other.
You confused the Blues.
No, nobody thought heel or no heel would be easy. All right.
No, they didn't.
No, we've got two more. I've got one, and then Bucky's got one to wrap this up. What about Dan Quisenberry, the late reliever of the Kansas City Royals? Dan Quisenberry, was he a heel or no heel?
Well, I'm going to have to tell you, I think Quisenberry is from my alma mater, so I'm going to say he's a no heel.
That is correct. University of Laverne.
Yes.
That is. If you didn't get that one, there would have been a problem.
So, Leo's would have been mad at me.
Yeah. All right. To try to break even or to try to go 500, 4 right and 4 wrong, you need to get this last one from Bucky.
Here we go. So this is it. We're digging into history books and everything. Let's go with Harry Truman.
Oh.
Heel or no heel?
I know he's from the state of Missouri. That doesn't sound like North Carolina, but it doesn't mean he didn't go there. I'm going to say no heel.
That's a good job.
That's correct.
Oh.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, you said James Polk was the only president, right? And so
that's right. I gave it away. Yeah, whoops.
Sorry.
Oh, my. Hey, at least you listened. You listened.
Yeah.
Truman, one of 9 U.S. presidents that did not have a college degree.
Ooh.
So, yeah, you can put that in your back pocket. Use it at Thanksgiving tonight. If conversation is really boring, that's how you crank it up a notch. You'd be like, can you guys name the 9 presidents that don't have a college degree? You start out with Truman, and you are good. Heel or no heel? John, 4 right, 4 wrong. We got nothing for you on this Thanksgiving
Day. I'm sorry.
Good work. Very good work. Get John on Twitter at JSRamos06. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. You can get Bucky Brooks, the former NFL player, NFL scout, at Bucky Brooks. That's where you can find him on Twitter. The Washington football team right now is having their hands full with the Dallas Cowboys, but how would they fare in the playoffs? One opinion may surprise you. That's next here on Fox.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
He's Bucky Brooks, the five-year NFL vet and NFL scout in the NFL Network and Move the Sticks podcast. I'm Dan Beyer. We are sitting in for Doug today. Glad to have you with us on this Thanksgiving Day. Just because Doug isn't here, just because it's a holiday, doesn't mean that we won't do what Doug normally does at this time, and that's hear something great from Fox Sports Radio or a Fox Sports 1 program in a segment we like to call...
And now...
What does the Fox say?
So while the Cowboys are facing Washington as we speak, Bucky, Nick Wright on First Things First earlier today on Fox Sports 1 is looking ahead for the Washington football team in a possible matchup with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the playoffs. Here's Nick.
I think Washington actually could scare one specific team in the postseason. If Washington wins the NFC East, they will do it on the strength of what? Their pass rush. And I am telling pass you rush. Right here, right now, today, if Washington wins the NFC East, and in order to do that, they need to win this afternoon against Dallas, Tampa is the odds-on favorite to be the 5 seed. They're not going to win their division, and they are probably going to finish with the best record of the non-divisional winners. If Washington were to play Tampa in Washington, first game of the playoffs, they 100% can win that game. They are the second-best pass rush in football. They absolutely could beat the Tampa Bay Bucs based on the strength of their defensive line alone. So I actually think Washington, Philly for a similar reason, if they were to get it together, I don't think they will because of their pass rush. Those teams actually could strike some fear in the opposition. I do not think Dallas, even if they get hot, with Dalton at quarterback and with a mediocre at best defense, Brandon, can make anybody afraid come the postseason.
All right, Bucky, you get that first slice of that pumpkin pie. Your thoughts on Nick thinking that Washington could knock off Tampa?
I think he has something to it because the front line of the Washington football team is outstanding. This team has third most sacks in the National Football League coming into the game. Chase Young, Ryan Kerrigan, Montez Sweat, De'Ron Payne, Jonathan Allen, they have 5 first-rounders on their front line. The way that they play under Jack Del Rio, it is a very simple scheme, but because they're so talented up front, they can give you problems. And we have seen with Tom Brady, the thing that he absolutely hates is pressure in and around his feet. And because they can generate it not only off the edges but up the gut, they can make it difficult for him to get into a rhythm. I'm not saying that the Washington football team could beat them, but they certainly can make it a very, very difficult game for the Buccaneers based on their personnel on defense.
I mean, Del Rio can sit in a high school defense and create negative plays. I stole what Bucky just said on Twitter. I completely stole it, but I wanted to be a part. I wanted to see what Bucky was going to say or what he was not going to say when I was stealing his material. I love the excitement that we have in trying to make the NFC East exciting, but I'll just say what Jory Epstein said about the Cowboys earlier with Washington. They are 3-7. I know they're coming around, but they are also Alex Smith is great. It's a great story, but he's also Alex Smith. So and the Buccaneers are still 7-4. I think we just have to be a little careful, pump the brakes a little bit on this Buccaneers.
But you should love this because you've seen your team do this. You saw the Seattle Seahawks knock off the New Orleans Saints with a 7-9 record. The Beast Quake has been done before. When you get into the tournaments, the records reset. Everyone is 0-0.
And when the Beastquake was when the Beastquake was happening, I was watching the Seahawks fall further down in the first round of that NFL draft. That is a true story. Where will the Saints be next?
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.